Hi and welcome to another of Earl Oaken's Gramophone Shows. This time I'm going to begin with an acetate which I picked up in the market two or three years ago. It was in ropey condition. I've done the best I can with the sound, but it won't sound pristine by any means. Still, it should be listenable. It turned out to be the end section of the radio comedy show which apparently kept Great Britain afloat during World War II. It was known as ITMA. Those letters, ITMA, stood for It's That Man Again. And this was the phrase that in all the pre-war newsreels they used whenever they had Hitler. At that point they didn't quite know how evil he was, but they regarded him as a sort of pompous and somewhat comic figure. But he was always on the news, so they'd say, oh, it's that man again doing this, that, or the other. Come the war, of course, that man became Tommy Handley, and he was the Liverpool-born comedian who fronted this show and everything worked around him. Now, as I always say, comedy dates rather badly, and of course, we're not in the war. We don't have the same knowledge, we don't have the same references, and it all sounds not particularly funny, at least to my ears, although you can get a sort of feeling of why they thought it was funny. Remember, too, that in those days comedy writers couldn't write about sex, couldn't write about religion, couldn't use four-letter words, couldn't do all sorts of things that we take for granted, so they had to rely on such things as dialect humour, class humour, wordplay and catchphrases, and that's how they got away with it, and indeed did more than get away with it. This was the most popular thing on the radio, and it took Tommy Handley from being a sort of, you know, reasonably well-known comedian to a complete household name. His name was as famous as that of Churchill by the end of the war, and when he died two or three years later, he was a major star. Well, without more ado, I take you back to those war years and give you the last section of one of those shows, ITMA.
Inquiry's calling, message for Mr. Handley about his cab. Urgent message about his cab.
Oh, it can wait. I've got to grow a corn to use up some old plaster. Hello? Get away.
You should have flagged.
Every Thursday night.
Yes, but you've got to put a message.
But what about the people in the next room?
What
they do as well. Well, fancy that. The man in room 16 is listening to ITMA. Yes?
Boss, there's a guy here from the BBC. He wants to talk to you.
What's he like?
Well, boss, he's got an umbrella with a beard.
Umbrella with a beard? Sounds a bit eyebrow to me. Send him in.
This way, sir.
Ah, good morning, Mr.
Ed Hobbs is the name. Oh, look here, Handley. This ain't good enough, see?
What ain't?
Too much blinking round your hotel. Interfere with the reception. Can't blinking well hear ourselves. Blinking well speak, we can't.
Well, I'm blinking well, sorry.
You got the blinking well, put a blinking sock in it.
Well, you blinking well move some of blinking else.
Yes!
What beautiful blinking English. I'll make more blinking noise than ever blinking ever now. I'll go down to the blinking grill room and get the blinking band to play blinking louder than ever blinking. Well, now I'll go and see about that cat. What the? Who put that bucket of water over my door?
It worked.
Yes, it did, eh?
Just one of Comical Chris's wet and watery ones.
Oh, really? That's very funny, that.
Yes.
Look here. You go through there and try it.
Oh, anything but a laugh.
Oh, right. I forgot to tell him that I'd had the late move round to the West Wing. Hello, they're starting in the grill room already.
To you, Claude. Now, to you, Cecil.
Now, go easy with the crocs.
Oh, Mr. M. Gammon, these waiters are the bone of my life.
Oh, really? Well, so. It's your job to train them. How
do you fall, Nutkin, Charlie Chapkin? Well, take it by corner. At Warner. It's a bit of a poser. Carl Rosa. It's quite an art, Doily Cock.
You fellas better get back to Biggleswade. Perhaps the booth and Andy Biggleswade.
Hey, sling me a plate, mate. And here's a tureen, my deputy queen.
It's a pity they aren't made of silk cellophane.
After you, chlorophobia. No, after you, out there, sister.
This is no way to run an upholstered chip shop.
Inquiries calling. Telegram for Mrs. Mulligan.
Mrs. Mulligan, that'll be for Jimmy O'Goblin, the Irish half quid. Now, this show is getting entirely out of hand. I'll pack the hotel up and open a tin of sardines. Hello.
Is that Mr. Handley?
I'll just go and have a look. Yes, it is me, yes.
There's an urgent message for you.
Oh, yes?
It's about your cab.
All right, put it through.
Whoa!
Where to, sir?
Oh, drive me to distraction.
listening to Tommy Handley in It's That Man Again with Jack Trey. And Sidney Keith, Dino Galvani, Horace Percival, Fred Yule, Bill Stevens, Dorothy Summers, Vera Lennox, Paula Green, Donald Bourdais, and Peter Eggster and the Jazzticulators. The BBC Variety Orchestra was conducted by Charles Shadwell. The show was written by Ted Kavanagh and produced by Francis Worsley.
And that was the most popular radio show in Great Britain, 10 years before the Goons came on the scene and wiped everything else away. Well now, as you know, I love the great opera singers of yesteryear. And over the last few programmes, I've played you all the great names of yesteryear. Caruso, Shaliapin, Galicorci, you name it, Boninsegna, Tita Ruffo. Maybe you have been thinking, though, that these were just one-offs, there were a few really great singers and the rest really weren't that good. Well, I would say no. I would say that those singers were at the top of a very large pyramid. In those days, each country had lots and lots of opera houses, and to become a star, you first of all had to become a star in your own country, and from then you had the chance to leap off into the sort of stratosphere and become an international star, remembering that, of course, in those days, to do anything internationally, you had to deal with the transport of those times. There were good train connections across Europe, although they weren't anywhere near as fast as today, but of course there were no aeroplanes, and if you wanted to change continents, that meant a trip of, I don't know, a week maybe. But on the other hand, that could be good for you because it meant that your voice could be resting in between shows. Anyhow, as you also know, many of these great singers were on what was called the Red Label, when you were talking about Victor and HMV at any rate. There was a lower level so that people who had not so much money could buy the same operatic arias but with not such famous people. And artists were assigned to the colour of their label, and you might think that these weren't very good. So I thought today I would play you one of these black label artists, and this one is surprisingly good. Now, whether she was on the black label because she simply didn't have that prima donna killer technique of demanding more money and demanding this and that, I don't know. But if she were around today, she would be, as they say, a superstar. She was a fine, fine coloratura singer, capable of singing the most difficult of arias. Maybe she was so easy to work with, they just sort of took her for granted a little bit. Her name was Josefina Hugue. I hope that's the way you pronounce her name. Although on some of her later recordings, because she was in Italy, she was listed as Giuseppina. They Italianized her first name. She was certainly good enough to be in the first complete recording of Pagliacci conducted by the composer, but then again there were no real stars in that recording. So as I say, she was probably regarded as a good, reliable, professional singer, but not one of the international superstars. Her career, generally speaking, and she was born in 1871 by the way, and she made her debut as early as 1889. But for the first decade of her career, she was mainly singing in Spain, which is because she was born in Barcelona. She did then develop a career, which was a good one, in Italy, singing all the major opera houses, such as the Scala in Milano. And she did, I know, before the turn of the century, do a major tour of the United States. But as I say, she never quite hit the heights. Nevertheless, listen to what she can do. I've got several recordings of her, and I've begun to collect her seriously because nobody seems to realize just how good she was. She was, in fact, signed pretty early by one of the Geisberg brothers, not Fred Geisberg, who signed Caruso, but his brother Will, and she recorded in her native Barcelona, although in Italian, as early as 1902, with a piano. So there's some very good recordings. You could even hear the sort of echo of the room in which she's recording. But I'm going to go for something a little later. This again may show how she was flexible and wouldn't make great demands. She manages to put into 3 minutes the great aria Casta Diva, at least one chorus of it, and then together with the follow-up part of the aria, which is called A Bello A Me. So you get this wonderful bit of melodic singing followed by an equally wonderful bit of bravura coloratura technique. It's a great recording, and were she around today, as I say, we'd be queuing round the block to see her. However, here we go, and this is her version of the Casta Diva aria from Bellini's Norma, recorded in 1907. Josefina Hugue, and I know I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. The acoustic process was not kind to sopranos. So when you listen to acoustic recordings of those sopranos, you have to sort of listen through the recording and imagine what's missing, the richness, the power. But even so, you can hear that she was something special. I don't think she'd be on the equivalent of the Black Label these days. Well, talking of black, last time in my program I did say that my favourite sort of jazz came from the black bands of the interwar years, and I played a Territory Band, if you remember. If not, you can download the program again and listen to it. However, this is not to say that white musicians, at least some of them, couldn't play jazz pretty damn well, and possibly in a different way. Their swing is different. It's just as good, but it's sort of different. But of course, I'm talking about the best jazz musician. There was a film about 50 years ago starring Danny Kaye, all about the Five Pennies, and that was a band led by, of course, there's the pun on his name, Red Nichols. But of course, the real Red Nichols wasn't like Danny Kaye. He started off pretty much as a sort of Bix Beiderbecke imitator, but he had his own sound too, and the records he made, the small group records in the late 20s, in a way sort of a white equivalent of Louis Armstrong's Hot Fives, but in a different style of jazz entirely, of course, with people like Miff Mole, made his name not only at home in America, but made him a huge jazz star in Europe too. But gradually the band got bigger, and the so-called Five Pennies that I'm going to play you has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 people. And this is as early as 1930, and the young musicians that he used ended up being the stars of the swing era, and several of them had their own big band. For instance, in this recording made on the 2nd of July 1930, you will hear the trombone section alone is Jack Teagarden and Glenn Miller. The clarinet player is a very young Benny Goodman, who's playing out of his skin, I think. And the drummer is Gene Krupa. So this was sort of an all-star band, but before any of them were stars. They swing like the proverbial clappers. This is one of my favourite jazz tracks. I first had it on an old Ace of Hearts LP that were issued on the Decca label in the 1960s that made all this early jazz suddenly available to all of us without having to find the original 78s. Though I look for them now. So this is the Red Nichols, Five Pennies, at their best in 1930, playing, as I say, China Boy.
Thank you.
And that was Red Nichols and his Five Pennies, can you believe this, 80 years ago. And if any of you needed waking up, I think that would have done it. Now, the USA is not the only place with A, its own style of music, and B, a whole gamut of great musicians. There's another place, also in America, it has a whole world of its own music, and of course I'm talking about Brazil. I don't know much about this group that I'm going to play you now. I bought the 78 once just because I like the look of it or something. I can't even remember why, but I think I was in Brazil when I bought it. It's a quartet known as Os Cariocas, in other words, the guys from Rio de Janeiro. It's a quartet that both sings in wonderful harmony and plays their own accompaniment. So you've got piano, bass, guitar, drums, I suppose, and a close harmony group all in one, and the result is wonderful. I don't speak Portuguese, but I know the title of this song is Adeus America, which means Goodbye America. And I think the idea of this, and I'm just guessing now, is that, yep, very nice, I enjoyed myself in America, but at the end of the day, I want to go back to Brazil where we have samba. They were formed in 1942, I understand, and are still going today, I believe. Possibly not with quite the same lineup. Like so many groups, somebody dies or somebody retires and their son takes his place or whatever. A bit like the Mills Brothers, I suppose. But they still exist, apparently, and certainly have released CDs within the last 10 years. So this 78 must surely date from somewhere around the late 40s or early 50s. It doesn't really matter when it was recorded. All that matters is that the music is great. So, ladies and gentlemen, I present for you right now Os Cariocas singing Adeus America. Cariocas, proving that the Brazilians were well aware of American music long before Bossa Nova, but at the end of it all, they preferred their own culture, and why not? Well, now we return to opera, and this time with a fascinating tenor. He was Jewish, which is important because he was trained in cantorial skills as well as operatic. He was born in Riga and died in Tel Aviv. If you look at his early career, you see that most of the time he was singing in German, despite being born in Riga, as I say. He made his debut, he was born in 1877, he made his debut as early as 1899 in Cologne, again in Germany, and then embarked upon a career which took him pretty much all over Europe and singing at some of the major opera houses. I'm just looking at a list right now. Berlin was involved. He went to London, of course. He was in Vienna. He was in Paris. He was, you name it, he was there. Nevertheless, possibly his fame, such as it is, rests on the period he spent at the Metropolitan in New York between 1910 and 1913. He made records both in America and in Europe, quite often in German, and he sang a whole range of roles, everything from Wagner to Verdi to modern operas like Wolf Ferrari. He sang in the Königskinder with Geraldine Farrar. I mean, he had a major career. In fact, there's a story of when he was singing on stage in New York, Caruso sitting in the pit and cheering and clapping wildly at something that he was doing. Nevertheless, he's largely forgotten by people these days, despite some wonderful recordings and his virile, rich tenor and an ability to sing just about anything. However, there's one recording that he made of a somewhat obscure opera by Mozart called Idomeneo, and a famous aria therein, which is known as Fuor del Mar, in which he demonstrates this phenomenal technique, no doubt partly due to his cantorial training, but he sings with the agility that any coloratura soprano would be proud of. And so I'd like to play that for you right now, because if you haven't heard it, it's quite phenomenal. Trills, runs, it's quite unbelievable. And not only that, but the breath control required, apart from the technique, is quite unbelievable. So here is Hermann Jadlowka, as he was before World War I, singing Fuor del Mar. there you have this astonishing recording of Fuori del Mar from Idomeneo. But of course, Jadlovka sings it in German. My German is not very good, but I'll do my best. The title is in German, Noch turnt mir. I only mentioned Jadlovka's name right at the end of my introduction, so let me say it loud and clear. Hermann Jadlovka. And a little bit more about him. He was indeed born in Riga. If you're wondering where that is, it's in Latvia. And he was born in 1877. And his parents were indeed very, very religious people. And they weren't actually particularly keen on him taking up opera as a career, whereas they were much happier having him perform in the synagogue. He carried on his operatic and concert career until the late 20s, when he finally decided to take over the position of the teacher that had helped him so much in his early career by becoming the main chazan, as it's called, in Riga. And indeed he stayed there until, of course, the appearance of the Nazis on the scene made his disappearance therefrom pretty important, and he went straight to what was then Palestine, where he spent the rest of his life. Again, the name Hermann Jadlovka, 1877 to 1953. Well, we've had a very wide and long journey, culturally speaking, today, and we're going to return to where we came from. I began this particular podcast with an excerpt from Itmar and the talents of Tommy Handley. Of course, Tommy Handley didn't suddenly appear from nowhere. He'd already had some sort of career on the British musical variety scene for some years. I don't think he was a big star, however, until he was in this radio show. Nevertheless, he'd been recording all sorts of comedy songs and routines for, well over a decade by the time he joined Itmar. So here you are, back in 1929, a long time before he was chosen for this, and he's singing a typical comedy song of the time. Remember the restrictions put upon comedy at that time if you wanted to be on the radio? No sex, no violence, no religion, no anything. And so it's sometimes these songs sound a bit twee to our ears, and that's simply because the people who wrote them were working under these restrictions. The chap who ran the BBC was very, very religious and very strict on such things, so you had to be careful what you sang. So here once more is Tommy Handley singing Misery Farm back in 1929. Oh, that reminds me, the recording we've just heard of Hermann Jadlovka, I said it was recorded before the war. In actual fact, more recent research in another discography tells me that it was actually probably recorded 1917 and not before World War I. However, as I say, back to Tommy Handley to sing us out, as it were, Misery Farm.
Got a farm, a barn of a farm, right in the middle of a swamp. There ain't any charm in our little farm, right in the middle of a swamp. Now nothing grows since the day we came. Misery Farm is our farm's name. We're miserable, so miserable down on Misery Farm. So are the animals, so are the vegetables down on Misery Farm. The hens won't lay, we can't make hay. We work all day and we get no pay. We're miserable, so miserable down on Misery Farm. Oh, yeah. Now we've got a cart with part of the cart stuck in the middle of the swamp. The old grey mare, she looks at it there, stuck in the middle of the swamp. We'll be digging it out next May, patching it up for Derby Day. We're miserable, so miserable down on Misery Farm. So are the animals, so are the vegetables down on Misery Farm. The hens won't lay, We can't make hay. We work all day and we get no pay. We're miserable, so miserable down on Misery Farm. Oh, we're miserable, so miserable down on Misery Farm. So are the animals, so are the vegetables down on Misery Farm. The hens won't lay, we can't make hay. We work all day and we get no pay. We're miserable, so miserable down on Misery Farm.
Tommy Handley, pretty much at the beginning of his career, back in 1929. Well, it only remains now for me to include something of my own, as I always do. This program should be going online on the 1st of June, and I'm preparing it well in advance, because by the time that comes around, I shall be in pre-travel packing panic mode, because on the 5th of June, I should be flying out to Los Angeles for just 2 days, and from there I fly on to Australia because I've been asked to help open. I'll be in the opening variety gala, as they call it, the opening concert of the massive Adelaide Cabaret Festival. And it's a festival where I shall be doing a mixture of music, everything from my own songs through to some jazz classics, such as a couple made famous by Nat King Cole, and of course some classic bossa novas. Incidentally, I may well meet the daughter of Nat Cole, because Natalie Cole is also performing the same days that I am. So if you happen to be in Adelaide, or at least in Australia, and get to the festival, you can actually come along and say hello to me, and no doubt Natalie Cole too. However, I'm going to play a recording of myself not doing a Nat Cole number, but one of the classic bossa novas. This was on the Getz Gilberto LP, as it was then, and it isn't recorded very often, like Gulf Mipanema, for instance. But it's a wonderful melody, and I've always loved it, and it's called O Grande Amor, The Great Love. It's a typical Jobim classic, and I do my best to pronounce my Portuguese, and I'm playing guitar, of course, and by the magic of the recording studio, I'm also playing piano. Well, apart from doing my one-man show at the Adelaide Cabaret Festival on the 11th to the 13th of June, I'm also booked into the Brisbane Cabaret Festival on the 17th of June, and just before I leave Australia, I'm doing two or three evenings popping in to the Butterfly Club, which is a tiny little place in Melbourne where I like to hang out, and then I'm leaving to fly to Los Angeles, where, although I haven't anything arranged as yet, I'm hoping to perform there as well before I return home on the 2nd of July. Any gigs that I do get put in for Los Angeles will be put up on my MySpace site. And if you'd like to meet me or hear me perform, keep going there. This is the link. It's www.myspace.com/Earl Oakin. One word, in other words, E-A-R-L-O-K-I-N. Once again, www.myspace.com/Earl Oakin. And with that, all there is left to say is once more that this is Jobim's classic, O Grande Amor, and that I hope you'll keep coming back to hear some more wonderful 78s. I've got thousands yet that I haven't played. So, as they say in France, au revoir, until the next time.
Ajoquei o véu. Há sempre um homem para uma mulher, e há de sempre haver para esquecer o falso amor e uma vontade de morrer. seja como for, há de vencer o grande amor que há de ser no coração como perdão pra quem choro. Esquecer é um falso amor e uma vontade de morrer, seja como for, há de vencer o grande amor que há de no coração como perdão pra quem chorou.